Hi and welcome to CDI's Restorative Practices podcast, Circles of Connection, where we get right into the heart of the community and talk all things RP. These past few months we've been busy collecting stories from right across the country about the impact of RP on people's work and life. We talked to social and community workers, youth workers, SNAs, teachers, students and more to gather their testimonies and stories. Each episode is focusing on a different setting. If you're not familiar with restorative practices, the restorative questions and the work CDI does, you can listen to the first episode of our podcast series where it's all explained.
Hi, I'm Dorothy Danew, a restorative practices trainer for CDI, delighted to be travelling around Ireland to collect these stories. For this episode, I went to Limerick in Moira's Youth Academy, where Camarcaim is based. It's a training centre providing programmes for young people from 15 to 25 years old who may be at risk of offending. It offers a safe environment for participants to explore their potential and provides appropriate training for their lives and future education. I interviewed three members of the staff, Jeffrey, the assistant manager, Kim and Tim, who are teachers, and they told me how they got started with restorative practices in the centre, how they were using them, and the impact it had on their work and life.
Good morning. My name is Jeffrey Fitzgerald. I'm the assistant manager here in Camarcaim in Limerick. Camarcaim is the Irish for step by step. I've been involved here for over 19 years in Camarcaim. I initially came to Camarcaim as a gym instructor and an outdoor ed teacher, which meant that three or four days a week I'd take the kids and the participants for gym sessions and outdoor activities, which were a multitude of various activities. And now I look after and support the team of six key workers that we have here and help run and support Camarcaim.
Hi, my name is Kim Brown and I'm a teacher in Camarcaim in Moira's in Limerick. I've been teaching here for about 17 years now and I was in mainstream for a short time before that. I teach social education and a little bit of French for the Leaving Cert Applied and various other programmes related to social education as well.
My name is Tim Noonan. I work within Limerick for several organisations to do with art and creativity. I work with youths, young adults, I work with homeless, and I work with people coming out of rehab, mental health and drug issue. So a lot of what I do is art, around art-based and horticulture. So it's creativity, it's bringing people into touch with part of themselves they've either let go or can't recognise at the moment.
Jeff and Kim explain how the centre got started with RP.
So I think getting started with restorative practice was something that was a very natural fit for us here at Camarcaim. When we first began in Camarcaim over 20 years ago, we had an ethos of being caring, fair, respectful and understanding with our participants and individuals. We were met with a lot of challenging behaviours from young boys and girls that would have been in the area or early school leavers. And for us at the time, in terms of staff and management, we wanted to manage these behaviours without being punitive or sending people home or not letting kids be who they were with challenging behaviour. So we sat down, tried to work on different approaches and different behaviours and tried to support the individuals as much as we could in terms of the problem is the problem, not the person. And we'd rather lose the argument than lose the individual. But there was a mix of everybody trying different approaches. So we sat down and we looked at an ethos of how could we bring this and make it a bit more collaborative and I suppose a toolbox that everybody could use. So we worked with Cormac Russell in Nurture Development. He heard what we wanted to do and we put up our language and we put up the types of behaviours that we were meeting. And Cormac helped us come up with, a strengths-based approach or a solution-focused approach that would help us in our day-to-day working in Camarcaim, trying to deliver an education, but also supporting youngsters that were, having difficulty with managing their days, managing, family conflicts, managing conflicts in the area, managing conflicts with their friends, or just day-to-day living and different issues that they'd meet. Getting started with restorative practice, was a really good fit in terms of I can't remember the time and date, but when we heard about it, we just thought that it was something that would really fit with how we had an outlook on life and how we had an outlook on, I suppose, day-to-day living with our boys and girls.
Jeff is mentioning Cormac Russell, Director of Nurture Development, who helps groups to take an asset-based approach focused on strengths in their organizations and communities. And this approach resonates strongly with restorative values and processes. Let's go back to Kim.
I suppose I was always inclined to work restoratively, even before I knew what restorative practices were or had ever heard about them. I would have had an approach that if there was a problem in a relationship with me and a young person or a class, that I would speak to them about that and try and get to the bottom of it and sort it out and move forward. That's just the way I like to operate. And I think a lot of people in Came or Came have that natural inclination anyway. It's the type of program or center that really likes to work with the young people in a non-punitive, non-authoritarian way. So we do like the young people, we kind of meet the young people where they're at, which can be challenging sometimes, and then give them the space to grow into cooperation, I suppose, with us, and then to own that growth because it hasn't been imposed on them. And we've always liked to work like that. A few years ago then, going back to 2012, I think, when I got my certification in restorative practices, it could have been that long ago. We heard about restorative practices. It really seemed a good fit with how we liked to work. So Elaine, our manager, introduced it to us and said she'd like us to get trained, all of us. There was a key cohort first of teachers and outreach staff who are here most of the time. And then that filtered down to most of the teaching staff. And we would have been trained in restorative practices through with the IIRP. That's how we got started. But it really was a good fit. It was very natural. And it just gave a bit of structure, I suppose, to how we worked. And so that there was a bit of consistency, I suppose, across the board in how we as a group of teachers and outreach workers dealt with young people. And it allowed us to be more explicit in our methodology as well, so that we could explain to young people why we were working this way, because it was so different to what they'd encountered in school. We did find, once we started using RP informally, we would have, you know, gotten very familiar, been familiar with the language. So it was a very easy transition to make to start using it, I suppose, deliberately, you know, and to be more deliberate in how we used it and when we used it.
They give an insight on how RP are used in the centre.
In context, how we use it, it's used on a daily basis for me here. It's nearly used on a daily basis in terms of problem solving, even in a club that I work for and I run on it three or four times a week. I find it a very good fit in terms of something that you can use for people in an impromptu situation without making them feel that they're being, I suppose, interrogated with questions. So the context that I would use it in, it's used in a formal context when we have issues here of challenging behavior. So if something's happened in the class and two individuals have, you know, gotten into an altercation and somebody's feelings are hurt or somebody said something, then participants are called to an office. They're dealt with, the RP questions are read out to them, but it's done, I suppose, in a non-scriptive way, because we've been reading them for so long, it's almost now it's a natural part of our conversation, and I find that very, very supportive for the participant. I find it a fantastic tool for a professional to be able to use. I suppose the other context would be for me is using as an impromptu tool if I saw or spotted a situation that happened in the, I suppose, the public area or the cafe where kids might have had a negative interaction, or if I was passing a classroom and kids might have had a negative interaction or a participant had a negative interaction with maybe a tutor or another teacher or another staff member, I'm able to use that during the day and just go to them in an impromptu situation, say, hey, what was going on for you this morning when you spoke like this, or what have your thoughts been since this morning? Are you still upset? Are you still annoyed about a certain situation? And it's a very good conversational piece when working with youngsters or working with somebody that has a difficulty regulating their emotions or that might be, I suppose, pretty upset at the time, especially for our males who would hold on to their stress and anger a little bit longer than most. I find it a fantastic and gentle tool to use, be it impromptu or, I suppose, formal in terms of classroom. And it does really work with really heavy, difficult situations. And like, for instance, there's been very little, but if there's been an argument where two kids might have been physical with each other, people are upset, tempers are high, emotions are high, it's a very gentle tool to be able to talk people down. And because they hear it as a regular daily conversation with everybody, because everybody's consistent, it's not just one or two people doing it. And I think that's a big plus. When everybody's consistent, it's a natural language for everybody. It's a natural language for all the professions that are in our unit, that if that same individual who has a negative interaction has dealt with me at 10 o'clock that morning, at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, if they're involved in something else, the other person is going to deal with it the very same way. And I think that's a very important message, that it's a tool that has to be used collectively. It's a tool that should be used as a whole. Because if it's done in small pockets with organizations, or if it's done in small pockets, it isn't going to work, because you're not going to have the consistency. You're not going to have the same level of approach. So the child is going to get messages, or the individual is going to get mixed messages. And I think that's important, because our youngsters need to be shown that adults as carers are on our side, but we have structures and boundaries in place. And these are the expectations that we hope to set for you.
We do an RP circle, just the informal, you know, low level question, just to connect in with each other before we start classes. We do that all the time. Some days there's good engagement, others there isn't. We just allow it to be what it is. But even lack of engagement shows you where a young person is at. So as a teacher, if you have that young person next class, you know that maybe they're not in great form, and you can just give a nice easy start, or you can ask straight out what's going on. And you usually get great results then. You certainly don't end up with a massive conflict. So we found, once we started doing the circles and using the RP language, that there were fewer and fewer critical incidents where we needed to call on, I suppose, the upper level of RP practices, like the facilitated meetings or conferences, because we just didn't have the same amount of incidents, really, once we started operating like that, because you could gauge where people were at. So you weren't challenging them inappropriately. You know, it really helped that way. So that would be the main way I use RP. It's very informal. First of all, the circles twice a day, and then informally in class with the language that you use. And just before something escalates, you're able to kind of nip it in the bud. But of course, you know, everyone's human, everyone has bad days, us as well as the kids. And sometimes you'll misjudge something, or no matter what you do, they're triggered and they're not going to respond. So we have had incidents.
We talked about the impact it had on them and on their students. First, with Jeff.
I suppose if you wanted to look at it as a modality or as a theory, I think restorative practice has a very good effect on people when you talk to them. They're open-ended questions. People feel heard and listened to. And I think for myself, I know this might sound funny, but when my youngest son was born, I can remember him being 18 months or 19 months, and I'd taken him to the thinking step on the stairs, and I'm going through the questions. And that for me was, I suppose, solidified that it would really work. It wasn't just a tool for work. So I was able to bring it into my own life. And to this day, when I talk to my sons, I have a very restorative approach. But prior to that, I suppose, being male, I would have found open-ended questions very difficult. I would have found them too inquisitive. But when I learned how they operate and how they work in conversation, I found it very, very easy to talk to teenagers, not being non-judgmental, very empathetic, but also being sympathetic to the situation or what was going on for any individual at one time. So using it in a professional capacity and using it in a personal capacity just went hand in hand, and I really enjoyed that. And because it was working for me in, I suppose, my home life and real life, I suppose I had a bigger trust in it than to use it on a professional capacity. And I think the thing for me is when you try something new for the first time and it doesn't work, you're really inclined to kind of not use it. But I suppose having an open mind and knowing that it worked for me at home, throwing enough muck at the wall and hoping it would stick, I suppose, was my approach to it. And I knew that it, when I tried it the first time, it worked. The second time, it mightn't have. The third and the fourth had a mixed bag of kind of interactions. But I was saying to myself, it's more positive than negative. Because before, it would have been, why did you do it? What are you doing that for? The usual parent interaction or the critical parent as opposed to the nurturing parent. But I found that with the restorative practices, having the car to go from at the start and learning the questions was one thing. Then what I used to do is I used to have the poster behind my desk in my office. And when we come in and try to, I suppose, figure out a solution for what had happened with people, as opposed to reading the card from a script, I'd have it behind the individual's head and I'd ask, so what's going on for you today and what has happened since? And it was a lot easier than pulling out a card and reading it. And I found that the interaction with the individual or the participant worked way smoother. Pacing and leading the individual, it's a very, very supportive way, I think, for me to be working and working off of that script. And I like those questions, and I call them the girly questions. They're the open-ended questions. And the reason I say that is I remember a friend of mine ringing about his wife having a baby girl, and I said, congratulations. But when my wife said to me, what does she have? What weight was she? When can we go and visit? I was like, I never asked any of the open-ended questions. Oh, I'm terrible at this. And then restorative and RP comes along and you find out that you've open-ended questions. It gives you more conversational pieces. So that's why I call them the girly questions, because I can still hear my wife to this day asking me all those questions. And it was a skill I didn't have at the time as a professional. And I found it really good to use as a tool for a professional and sit with me in terms of my professional outlook, handling difficult situations and handling, I suppose, different circumstances on a daily basis. And I think it's fantastic. I think the difference that it makes in my life is huge in terms of conversational pieces and a way in with individuals that might be struggling on a day-to-day basis. It gives you a good platform to draw from if you're struggling with somebody and just, you know, going at the pace of the individual, which is what I like about RP. It's not about you. It's about the other person. Sometimes the profound thing is, and this is really strange, and I've never seen it before or since in any other situation, some of the kids that would have been in an RP meeting with a professional at the start on their own, trying to support them and regulate them, when they're involved with another participant, you're nearly excluded from the conversation, because that individual has had so many interactions with the RP, with the professional, that they can nearly run the conversation in their own words to support the other individual who they're actually meeting with. And it actually works subconsciously, I think, or I feel. I've been in two or three situations where an individual would tell the other child or other participant, look, I don't want to be doing this. I don't want to be in here. We're all taken out of our class. Everyone else now is laughing at us because we're here. So that's almost like a subconscious level of him being asked the questions in his head, and he's saying it out in the meeting to the other person who hasn't got experience of it. So I think the modelling side of it is more practical for us because everybody's consistent with it. A lot of the professionals use it. Even if it's in a classroom context of, you know, small behavioural issues, when a teacher or a tutor says it to them, it's almost natural. So then when they have to come face to face with it, they know the procedure. They just talk that type of a language.
That's what I found has changed for me since I've started using it. I'm far less egocentric in my practice. And I just know that sometimes it's just not about me, you know. And that's great. There's great freedom in that. It clears the air. It definitely builds relationships. I find the kids that you have a meeting with, you usually end up having a much closer bond with those because something very real has happened. And it's not just a superficial encounter of me walking into a classroom going, okay, do your work and then leaving. We've both expressed very real feelings and shown vulnerabilities and we've gotten to know each other a bit better. And you can't help but connect with someone when you do that. So it forms very strong connections, very lasting connections. And you see that when you meet them years later or when they come back in, when they have babies, you know,
Let's finish with Tim, who talks about the impact it has on him in the different settings he is working in, as an art teacher and as an artist.
The impact it's had on me, like I say, is one of personal, not just reflection, but personally moving forward in my practices. Nothing formalized as such, apart from when you go into a staff meeting or a planning meeting, an IP meeting, where what you've found, experienced, discovered can help plan for the future. Stories are you normally around formal settings, but like I've said before, it can be informal out on the street, and it's lovely. I have done some work in prisons with people, and it's lovely when you're out and about, say shopping, and somebody comes up on the street and says, "Hi, Tim, how are you getting on?" Somebody who left prison years ago, but they still remember that experience within a classroom or a corridor or something where you've shared something and they're willing to come back to you years later and shake your hand and say, "How are we getting on?" Which is a nice, lovely experience. In that case, it's worked, do you know? So that's lovely. That's one little story. Better relationships. Definitely. It helps to build relationships because, like I say, you can share feelings, you can share experience, and you can come to some common plane where you can move on. We're not that different. Nobody's that different. We might all feel we're isolated and have a huge weight on our shoulders of conflict and trouble, but nobody's that different. We all have that at some degree, at some level. So it's about flattening that playing field where we can get on and do things together. Conflicts happen. Conflicts are going to happen throughout life, and it's how we cope with them. So RP is giving me a better way of coping skills. I do have formal questions in my wallet, which I carry around with me. Very rarely used, because I judge each situation as it appears. So I've only ever once pulled those cards out and asked questions of a small group of people, and it was good. It was, but the questions aren't always appropriate in their formalized manner, because people then tend to feel they're in a formalized interview situation. So informally, it tends to come out maybe in different words, but you're still asking the same question. You still have the same meanings behind it. What does it mean to you? How do you feel about this situation? You're still drawing out the same things. But I do carry the questions around with me. And every so often, when my wallet falls out of my coat and everything falls out, I can pick it up and read it and just remind myself. So it's not a continual formalized practice, but it's there. I have it. As an artist, I do carry out practices where we walk and we talk. So we have a psychogeographical practice where we walk the streets, say, of Limerick, and we discover gold in those streets. There's always a story to be discovered, either with you personally or with your family or with your friends, a story we love to share. So it is an arts practice as well as a restorative practice as well. And then the hard bit is to record it, if you like, or to make art from it. How do you disseminate what you've learned? So formally you can make hard copy. Informally you can take it forward with you in your brain, in your head, in your personality, which I think to me is quite useful.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed our podcast. Don't forget to rate and to subscribe to the show. And thank you to the production team at the podcast studios and to all who took part on the project. Find out more at cdi.ie.